Chapter 6 The Silence of the Lambs. January through March, 2003. In previous wars, Congress had been populated by hawks and doves. But as war in Iraq loomed, it seemed to consist mainly of lambs who hardly made a peep. There were many failures in the American system that led to the war, but the failures in Congress were at once perhaps the most important and the least noticed. The last chance for voicing reservations was offered by hearings on Iraq held in February 2003, but this was not an opportunity that Congress would take. It had made its choice the previous October when it gave the president a blank check to go to war. As a body, it was willing to ask questions, but that was little more than a pose, because it didn't object when it didn't get responses that spoke to the issue. It was a Congress that would take no, or something close to it, for an answer. Douglas Feith's appearance before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee at its major pre-war hearing on Iraq was a memorable demonstration of testimony as tap dancing. He couldn't say how many troops might be required, or what a war might cost, or even what other countries might join the U.S.-led effort. "Senator, it's hard to answer a lot of these what-ifs because a lot depends on, you know, future events that we don't know," Feith told Senator Joseph Biden, the Delaware Democrat who was the ranking minority member on the panel. "There are enormous uncertainties. As for the key question of the duration of the occupation," Feith deferred answering. "I don't think I want to venture into the prediction business," he parried. The senators knew they weren't getting straight answers. There's a kind of disconnect between the rhetoric we're hearing and all the rosy scenarios, noted Senator Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island. "Why aren't we hearing some more about a worst case? And what are we prepared for in that instance?" Senator Russell Feingold also expressed puzzlement. "Why do we give the president a blank check to go ahead with this before we had the answers to these questions?" he asked. "The American people have no notion of what we are about to undertake," Biden concluded that day. It was an important observation about a democracy about to launch a war in a distant land, alien culture, and hostile region, but it was made in a tone of passive resignation. The first casualty of the Iraq War may have been the reputation of Secretary of State Colin Powell. In February 2003, Powell went to the United Nations and staked his personal credibility on going to war. It was the old general's ultimate sacrifice as a good soldier, throwing his reputation behind the administration's campaign and using it to clear out some of the remaining opposition to going to war. "My colleagues, every statement I make today is backed up by sources, solid sources," Powell said early in the speech, as the CIA's tenant sat behind him, as if literally backing him up. "These are not assertions. What we are giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence. Indeed, Powell appeared to lift the veil on highly classified intelligence sources and methods, sharing crown jewel information such as intercepted Iraqi military communications. We have first-hand descriptions of biological weapons factories on wheels and on rails. Our conservative estimate is that Iraq today has a stockpile of between 100 and 500 tons of chemical weapons agent. He remains determined to acquire nuclear weapons. What I want to bring to your attention today is the potentially much more sinister nexus between Iraq and the Al-Qaeda terrorist network."